Blog Talk Radio.
Well, I love that song. Are you guys ready to rumble or what? This is Cubanarama. Marta Sosa is your host. And guess what? Before we get started in the ring, with Alex Ramos, he's in the house, I just wanted to let you guys know Sugarcane Rush is the band that did that wonderful song Cubanarama for me. So support them, get their CD. And you won't be disappointed. They have wonderful music. Sugarcane Rush. They are on Facebook. You can get their CD on CD Baby. Is it CD Baby? CD Baby. There you go. I also want to say thank you to my husband for doing that great mix. He's the new DJ at Cubanarama. Thank you so much, hon, for working it out. You did a great job. And also, I want to say for those people in Hudson County, the Hudson County is in New Jersey. You guys, you have a get-together, a humongous reunion in Miami coming up this Friday, August 6th and 7th. Get a hold of Tony Bombino, his phone number, and Tony Bombino and his girlfriend, Janelle Tavares, both of them are working this thing. This is their third annual get together, not only for Union Hill High School, but for the whole Hudson County. So if you have family, if you have friends, if you know anybody in Hudson County, spread the word. It doesn't matter if you're living there or not. I moved out of Hudson County when I was 16. We're getting invitations now. So they just started doing it 3 years ago, and it's going to be the biggest get-together ever in Miami. The phone numbers to call is 305-747-6757, 305-747-6757. And then I have another number. I believe this one is Tony's, 786-200-1561, 786-200-1561. And there you have it. And now we're also going to be giving away a T-shirt. We're going to be giving away a T-shirt with our guest of the night of this evening, Alex Ramos, on it. He is on the line. We also have Syndicate News on the line. I'm opening up both mics. And I just want to say hello. Welcome to our guest of the evening, Alex Ramos. You're in the ring. You're in the house. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. I listened. The music was great. I loved it.
We couldn't believe it. We were dancing here the whole time. My husband was working on it. I'm like, wow, this is the first time he's done anything like this. And I think he did a pretty good job.
I thought it was great. I thought it was a good job. It was wonderful. That's my kind of stuff.
Oh, my goodness. I love it. Alex, thank you so much for coming on the show. I'm so, so happy that you are with us tonight. You're an amazing human being. I've been reading about you and your life and your career, and you started out very, very young. What a wonderful life you have had and the experiences that you have had in life. At 11 years old, you started out really paying attention to the boxing world. Tell me a little bit, and then I want to bring in, I think that Syndicate News, I don't know if you know anybody in Syndicated News, do you?
I know a bunch of people, but let me tell you, I did start out at a very young age, yes, I did.
Uh-huh.
And I started at the age of 11. And, it always takes me back to wonderful days. At the age of 11, was very young. My father, of course, put me in boxing. Boxing to me was my life. It took me out of the streets. There was a lot of kids in the neighborhood that were, of course, I come from the Bronx, the South Bronx, which was a pretty rough place. And my father wanted me out of the streets because there was a lot of problems. I saw my first homicide at the age of 8 as a young boy.
Oh, wow.
And something I always remember, too, but my father wanted me out of the streets, but there was a lot of bad things going on, but I needed to keep out of the streets. So my father had a friend that he worked with that was going to the gym. There were two teenagers. There was one that was named Chinito and one named Cecilio. I never forgot this. And they were a little older than me, and they went to a school by the name of Samuel Gompers. And they took me to the gym as a little boy, and I used to go with them, or they picked me up. And at sometimes they wouldn't pick me up, so I would meet them at Brook Avenue. That's where I live. I live between Cypress and Brook Avenue. And sometimes they wouldn't show up, but I would keep going. And if my mother and father would find out that I wouldn't go to this boxing gym, I used to train at West 28th Street, which was in Manhattan, where all these professional fighters used to go.
Uh-huh.
That's where I went all the time.
At the age of 11?
Yeah, if my mother would have found out that I was taking this train by myself or my father, I would have been in a lot of trouble. But I was doing it because I wanted to go. I loved it. I was amazed. Are you kidding me? I loved it. I was.
So when you're 11 years old and you're entering, you weren't scared, you weren't like intimidated by these guys. They're big muscles and they look rough. You're 11 years old. What does a kid at 11 years old feel when you're walking in there and you're looking at these guys? Really, I mean, you must have seen them punching each other out. You weren't scared at all?
No, not at all. It was something that I loved. Something that I wanted to do. You see, it was something that I wanted to do. I wanted to be like them. I mean, they had, first of all, they had six-time world champion training. There, Emil Griffith. They had Tom the Bombardier. Jerry Quarry would come in there. Carlos Monzon. All these big, famous boxers. The gym was owned by a guy that was named Gil Clancy. And there was another guy by the name of Haram Ansanet, and had all these fighters, and that was the guy that pretty much had me, the Spanish guy, the Puerto Rican guy, and all these, and it was like maybe two or three kids, and I was the young kid, and there was not too many kids, and then Chinito, and his father. And believe me, there was not too many kids. So I stayed with it. I stuck with it. And it was very, very intriguing to me. And then as I'm in the gym, the longer I'm in the gym, there was one day that this man came upstairs. There was a newspaper that was called the Metropolitan Review. Okay? And this newspaper, the Metropolitan Review, came upstairs to do a piece. And they did a piece on me. And it says, the 11-year-old Wonder Boy. Okay.
And wow.
I've never been on a newspaper. So, to me, that was like, wow. They did an article on me on the newspaper. I went downstairs. And I bought a whole bunch, of course, and I also stole some because I was a young kid. And the 11-year-old Wonder Boy, and they talk about me. I brought some home to give to my sisters, to give to my cousins, to give to a couple of people in my block, to some of my family. Wow, the 11-year-old Wonder Boy, I was in a newspaper. Wow, I never been in a newspaper before. Wonderful to me, and I stuck with it. I kept winning fights. My first fight was at the age of 11.
Wow,
okay?
I'm hearing a little bit of a noise. I'm not sure what it is. When you first started talking, it was okay, and I'm getting from the chat room that people may have a hard time hearing you. I'm not sure. Are you moving around? Are you boxing anybody right now?
No. I'm not. How about if I sit up better? You want me to sit up? Okay, I'm sitting up now.
I don't know. Maybe you can try sitting someplace else or going somewhere else. I'm not sure, and I will let you know what's going on. In the meantime, you know, since we have a caller, let me bring that person in and see if they have a question or. But where you are right now, you are at 11 years old. You had your first article and your first fight. Syndicated News, you're on the air.
Hi, this is Ruthie DeTucci. I'm surprised he says he doesn't know who that might be.
Ruthie! What's happening?
I just put a link inside your chat box. Do you see the link?
Oh, my God. Ruthie, how you doing?
All the reporters left
the
Roseland Ballroom. And, in fact, this was a famous night because this gentleman had his tapes cut off, his gloves removed, and he went ahead and he sucker-punched the guy that had just won the fight at the Roseland Ballroom. And the room was filled with police officers who were celebrating the 911 loss of the fireman, remember?
What was that?
Look in the chat box. I just put the link on there. I was the only woman, a Latin woman, una hispana, that got the photo that went around the world when that guy knocked that other one on the chin. Why is that important? because a year later, he went on to murder Max Kellerman's brother.
Oh,
I got that
yeah.
old picture.
Oh, yeah. Oh, Ruthie. Yeah, remember that? Right.
Yeah,
right.
That was my picture. I sent, yeah, I just, it. There it is. It's in the New York Times. I just sent you the link, and I've got the credit line, Ruthie DiTucci.
Yeah,
oh,
Ruthie
wow.
DiTucci. Yeah, that's
vez,
right.
Otra vez una hispana.
Oh, una hispana, mi corazón. I know you real well. I
yes,
know
you do.
Real well, Ruthie.
And you and you know how I feel right now? I feel like my husband's with another woman, and I'll tell you why. Because I have been after this man for years to come on syndicated news, and he has said, yeah. Soon, talk to my girl. And I call her, and I email, y hago de cuanta cosa. And what? Now I come and I see him on another show on Blog Talk Radio.
Ruthie, I'm a Latina too, so you know
I
you're my sister.
Ruthie, peor.
Ruthie, pero yo te quiero anyway.
No, I don't want to hear it. Give me the nonsense.
You know,
Ruthie. A dozen roses is not going to fix this one. This is like
Ruthie,
I caught you in another woman's bedroom. It's the same.
Ruthie,
no,
yo te doy un big beso cuando te vea, corazón.
No. And you told me you were going to bring your friends, the people that
Ruthie,
were supporting you. The guy
Ruthie,
with the bald head, with the woman, his wife is completely opposite politically. What's their name? Yeah, those people. Never saw them, never saw you. No, I don't want to hear it. I'm going
to call my friends. Oh, my God,
look,
see, oh, my God.
Alex,
God,
you're
my
in
God.
Trouble.
I'm in trouble. See, I'm getting in trouble, but you know what? I still love you, Ruthie, and you know I do.
And you know what I did this year?
Yeah, God bless
what?
You.
You know I'm, you know, tú sabes que soy delgada. You know that, right?
Yeah, I know that. I know you are.
Me metí en un régimen de ejercicio.
I know. Uh-huh.
I was on Victoria's Secret for 3 months on the. It's called Fabulous 50s. Así de linda estoy.
Oh man!
Oh
my
God!
Parezco un bombón.
She's a bonbon. She's just as good as a chocolate bonbon, is what she's saying. And Ruthie is jealous because we have Alex in the house, but Ruthie. You know, I'm married.
Oh, my.
You know, I got to see her then. I got to definitely see her. Listen, I know
I got pictures. I mean, can you imagine? Do you know how old I am?
No.
I'm 57 years old.
And she looks
great.
Oh,
Ruthie, but you sound like you're 15.
Ruthie
and
looks great.
I look
and
like
does,
I'm 25.
She looks great.
I'll send you pictures. I'm serious.
No,
I
believe you.
Wait a minute. I got a calendar. Give me your email. Go on. Give me your email.
Me or
just
Alex?
Just send it to me and I'll send it to her. How about
no,
that?
No. Then you'll never send it to her. Then she'll never see it.
Ruthie, my email is marta@cubanarama.com. But you can find me on Facebook under Cubana Space Rama.
No, because I want to send emails so that I can send you my calendar.
Okay. Oh, I would love it.
Okay, let's have it.
Let's have it.
Give me the email address.
Yeah, it's in the chat room. Are you in the chat room?
No, I'm in.
Yeah,
the,
you
I,
are.
Yeah, but I'm in the server.
Oh, okay.
I can't
so
send
it's Mar-
there.
Okay, it's Marta Marta
uh-huh.
at Cubana Brahma Cubana.
Uh-huh. Yes, I got it.
Exactly, guanarama.com.
Mm-hmm. Isn't that something? I can't believe he would have the audacity to go see another woman when he's been telling me for years, I'm going to Kim. Yes, I'm going to
Kim. But you never contact me. You know,
yes,
you
I do. Call the lady. The lady
listen,
you keep
wait
throwing
minute, you Wait
over.
A minute. Let me just say this sincerely from the bottom of my heart. You know, they made me a supervisor for a sanctioning body, you know, for the global boxing union. Let me say this because I like to be straight.
Wait a minute.
You know, now I travel the world to give out belts to championship fighters, for the championship fighters, and for the championship women fighters also. So
do you remember why we were talking in Brooklyn? Do you remember that so many years ago?
Yeah.
Do you remember what happened? You don't remember.
listen to this.
I'll tell Cubana Rama. What happened
tell
was
me.
I came in, Cubana Rama, and what I wear is I wear working shoes, you know, and I wear my nice little jeans, you know, with a blazer, you know, a working jacket. And this guy came in and said to me that if I really wanted to get my thing done, that I should open my blouse a little more and show some cleavage. And I said, wait a minute. I went to college to not have to do those things. I thought with my education and my skills alone, I could do this job. And Alex's assistant, she started applauding. Like one woman backing up another. It was really cool.
Yeah.
Because
and
they have
the
a
men.
Lot of women like that in the sport of boxing that are ridiculous. They have a lot of women in the sport of boxing that are ridiculous like that, yes.
And I dress like I'm going to work. I dress like
classy.
I'm
classy.
Classy,
yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
I was wearing a Dolce & Gabbana jacket, and the guy didn't even recognize that what I was wearing,
well,
the jacket
don't have
alone.
To. You know, that's
it was
how
very,
people.
Very serious, classy, and conservative.
That's
and by the way,
have.
I got my shots, and they got in USA today.
Yeah, great.
That is wonderful. We have a guest in the chat room that is saying, she's saying, Caroline, that you have great character, and you do.
Who is it?
You know, it takes a lot, I think, for women today, not just today, because I remember getting hit on a lot, too, when I was younger, and I had to work to survive. No, I was never a boxer, but you know, I worked as an office assistant. I've worked offices, Merrill Lynch, different offices throughout my life. You know, in insurance, and then I did hair for quite some time, and then I got a degree in journalism. But I never
Beautiful.
Did work with boxers.
But I
do understand what happens because it happened to me all the time. And I think it's wonderful that you say, you know.
We're here. We're here. We're present.
Exactly.
We're in the house. Now, Alex, what's your email?
My email is rbfalex, rbfalex @gmail.com.
That's Roger Barrows Fox
Frank,
Alex.
Yeah.
S as in Sally?
F like Frank, rbfalex@gmail.com.
Gmail.com. Okay, I'm sending it. Okay, I'm going to call it. And who's going to get to the email first?
Me, right now. Right now.
You're serious?
Yes, I am. Yes. Yes.
Okay. It's in PDF, so it should get there now. It's there.
Okay.
Hit Control F5, and it should come right in.
Okay, thank you.
I'm teaching technology at Brevard Community College in Florida.
Oh, my goodness. That's
and I
awesome.
Run, and my website is syndicatednews.net. I'm the only blog talk radio website that actually had Santiago, Chile, my sister station, The Pulse, on the air while Joran Vandersloot was being arrested in Santiago, Chile and being returned to Peru. And because I had that connection, Bo Dietl agreed to come on my show. So the interview of Bo Dietl is also on my show. It's a blog talk radio site, and it's called Syndicated News. So if you go to syndicatednews.net, you can see my show.
Okay. You know, I think I found something about you on Facebook, and I added you as a friend. Let's hook up. I would love to interview you and have 2 hours with me and find out everything about you. You sound like a really cool lady.
Well, in 2000, 10 years ago, I used to buy and sell generic domain names, and I would buy them from Network Solutions, and sometimes before then, I bought them, I registered them for free, and I sold them to corporations, and that's how I got actually sued by the United States Department of Commerce. I think I'm the only Hispanic woman that ever got sued by the DOC. So instead of giving up my company, I moved it to China. So it's in Hong Kong doing very well.
Are you a part of the Retired Boxers Association Foundation by any chance?
No, I didn't do that because what I did was I gave them publicity, and since I own a search engine optimization company, I gave them free listings. I put them in the front page of the search results. Since I already paid for that. That's how I made my
investment.
He doesn't even know what I do for him.
That is awesome. Ruthie, it's so nice to have friends like you and friends like Alex. And we're going to talk tonight about everything that this guy has done for people. But,
yes.
You know, I have never met Alex before. I didn't know him like a lot of people knew him and actually watched him box.
For years.
I think,
for years.
Yeah. All the things that I've been hearing about him and the things that I've been reading that are, they're just so amazing. I've never met anyone like him.
I'm curious. Did anybody receive my calendar yet?
Okay.
I'm not by
your computer. They're telling me that, yes, it's here. We have received your calendar.
Did they open it?
I'm not by a computer right now.
Unbelievable.
Because I'm at Jackie's house. My executive director's house, watching their house. They're out.
Hi,
camping.
Jackie. Hello.
She's out camping.
I say hello to Jackie. Jackie's the woman who was applauding me when I said that I came dressed to do business.
Right.
I didn't come dressed for a date.
Wow.
Yeah, right.
That is, oh, my God. Is that your picture on the calendar?
That's me.
She's almost naked.
No, I'm not. No, I'm not.
No, I'm saying that so that Alex will run to the computer.
No. I don't have a computer.
No, I'm kidding. Alex, you have to watch the. You have to look at these pictures.
Isn't that nice for 57?
Really,
for 57?
Okay, I don't get it. You wouldn't pull your button off of the shirt, but you take pictures like this and put them.
That's right. And I'll tell you why. Because this is the result of an exercise regimen. I'm very proud to look like this at 57.
No, you should be. And you, that body does not look. How old did you say you are?
I'm 57.
You look like you have a 20-year-old body.
I know. I love it.
You do. I need to train with you, girl.
My husband
is looking at these photos. Okay, stop it. We got to get on with the show.
Yeah, please.
Oh my goodness! This is amazing. What a wonderful look. Well, thank you so much. You know, I will have to check all of the other emails. You may have been the winner. I don't know, but I don't want to speak too soon before I check the other emails and see. Yeah, guess what, Ruthie? You may have won it. We'll see. I will have to check it after the show, and then I will email you and let you know who is the winner of that T-shirt.
But you can imagine looking at Blog Talk Radio this morning and seeing Alex Ramos there after I begged him to come on my show, and then to see him there, it's like finding your husband in another woman's bed.
Oh, so that's how you found him, because our show was featured.
I did another one with in Philadelphia with a Blog Talk Radio with a guy by the name of Emmett Tower.
Yeah, that's the second time you've been on a Blog Talk Radio and you haven't been on mine. That's the second
time. You know, I don't know. There's a guy that by Emmett Tower that did this. I don't know how to do this. They invite me. I'm a nice guy. You know, I mean, I've always been a nice guy. You know, it's not like I'm doing something criminal.
No, we're making it. It sounds like he's coming on the show to get beat up. I didn't plan this for you Alex.
That's okay. We forgive him.
He's such a sweet man. And here, let me tell you something. He really is. I mean, I met him. Okay, I have to say I wanted
a long time ago.
Because we love to thank everybody that's been involved in the making of this show. Brett Michaels, the other Brett Michaels, Brett Michaels, Mikels. Check him out. I also interviewed Brett Michaels, who is a singer from California, wonderful singer, and he is friends with Alex Ramos, and he's the one that hooked us up.
Yeah,
for this interview tonight.
That's great.
And did you know, Alex, the story behind boxing? Do you know when is it that boxing first started? When did boxing came into the scene of the world? When did it come up?
Well,
in the Olympics in Greece.
Well, it came back,
this woman knows her stuff.
Yeah.
Oh, no. I know this. I studied it because when I went to take photos in the Bronx, It was at Lehman College, and they said they were moving it to Syracuse in near Albany, and I went up there. The men would not let me in. This was 27 years ago, and they wouldn't let me in. This is for men. We don't want any women here.
Yeah, that's how it is. You know,
and I said, really? How do you get in here and I can't? And they said, that's because we took the judge's test, that. Well, I took the exam, and I got the highest score of any woman in the state of New York.
That's how it is.
Wow.
You know?
Well, that's why I was checking out the history behind it, and you're correct. It started out in 675 before Christ.
Yeah.
And do you know that some of the pictures that I found, they reflected. It was a different culture. It was totally different. It was what they had is. They had these men, they would have these guys like sitting face to face, and they would beat each other with their fists until one of them was killed. That's the way they did it.
Yeah, bare
knuckle
fighting. They
fought until the death.
Yeah, bare knuckle fighting.
Yeah, I'm so glad that that's not the way it was when you started at 11, right? I mean,
yeah.
So
yeah.
Tell me about that very first fight. At 11 years old, do you remember who you fought against?
I remember all these guys. I remember a lot of these guys. I remember fighting this guy, and it was wonderful, you know, because you win. Back then, you win trophies, and I remember coming home with my first trophy, and it was
the New York Golden Gloves in 1977.
I already had fights after that, you know. My first amateur boxing match was in 1972. My first amateur fight was in 1972. That's when I first started. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So 1972 was my first amateur fight. So from 1972 all the way up to 1977, okay, I had been undefeated, okay? But I already have been picked. I had fought at the Junior Olympics.
Oh.
This was unbelievable. They picked me out to go compete against the PAL Nationals. I practically won every tournament in the world. They picked me out. They used to come pick me out. The PAL, the Police Athletic League, would come
mm-hmm.
get me. They would come get me. The major people, they would come get me to come represent their gyms. Unbelievable. So I would win. I won a gold medal for the Junior Olympics. I won a silver medal my first year because I lost in 1979 and 1975. But then I came back the following year in 1976 and knocked everybody out in the tournament.
Oh,
wow.
Knocked everybody out. And then in 1977, 78, 79, and 1980, I won the Golden Gloves. That's when I started to really, really elevate, you know, my career. And then I won national tournaments. I practically won every amateur tournament in the world. And then in 1980, I would have represented the Olympics. And now, during all this time, I'm fighting USA versus the world, where I fought Cuba, Russia, everything. I was fighting everybody, international. And I fought Cuba several times. I lost to Cuba only one time. And I fought the Cuban world champion, Jose Gomez. But that was one hell of a fight in Madison Square
mm-hmm.
Garden.
Wow.
I went to Cuba. I fought in Cuba. I knocked out the Cubans in, you know, I mean, great.
Why didn't
fighters.
You knock out Castro?
Yeah, Castro.
One punch.
Castro liked me, believe it or not. Castro used to.
I'm sure.
You know, because he knew that I can fight, you know. They used to, like, let me tell you, in Cuba, I was one of their favorite fighters. Believe me. Teofilo Stevenson is my friend, I'm telling you. And they because I used to translate, of course, you know, for the team, for the whole team.
Uh-huh.
I used to be their translator. It was fun. It was fun to me because I spoke Spanish, and it made me feel so good.
Yeah.
To be able
Cubans love boxing, and we love baseball, and
yeah.
You know.
Oh, those guys are unbelievable athletes. Believe me.
Yes.
But they were like professionals at what they were doing. You know.
So did you quit school to start, because you started at 11 and you mentioned all these years, you went from 76 all the way to 80s.
Never
did you
quit
school?
I graduated with honors. Are you kidding me?
Wow.
Listen,
all right.
Listen, you kidding me? Never quit school. Are you kidding me? My mother, first of all,
that's
I
awful.
Didn't mention this. My mother, okay? My mother didn't care about anything. First of all, my father, I want to tell you this. My mother was a school teacher in Puerto
Wow,
Rico.
Okay.
My mother's side of the family, you got professors, teachers, and all that. On my mother's side of the family. On my father's side of the family is a little different. But my mother's side, my grandfather was a professor, a principal. Teachers, whatever, and my mother's side, my mother was a school teacher and whatever, and my mother was a school teacher here in New York, and they all worked for the school. Everything they had to do was with schooling, right?
Mm-hmm.
And my mother made sure of this: you gotta finish. She didn't care nothing about the boxing. Now she knew that I was good.
Was it difficult for you to do school and do? But you said you graduated with honors, but was it difficult for you to do boxing and do school at the same time? So many times you see kids nowadays going, "Oh, it's so stressful. I can't hack it. I have too much to do."
It was stressful, okay. It was stressful. It really was. But I tell you what, I don't know and. I guess I was sort of spoiled. I was spoiled, you know. I really was. I was spoiled. They treated me extra special because I don't want to say it that way, but I really was.
Well, they were good to you. They were good to you.
They were good to me, and I need listen. I was the president of my high school. Okay.
Wow.
All right. I was the president of my high school. I, at the Lincoln Center, I'm speaking in front of everybody, okay? And thousands of graduates.
Have had a ton of friends in school. I mean, you're an athlete. You're a boxer. You're
track,
also really good at school.
What was that? I'm sorry?
You're also really good at school. You know how we always look at somebody
yeah.
who's really smart,
yeah.
you know, the kids
oh,
that
yeah.
knew math or science
yeah.
really good.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Listen,
and then they were built and they could do sports. It was do you have a lot of girls after you?
Girls,
like Ruthie?
Had all the girls.
Ruthie, you're still with us, right?
Yes, I'm here.
You know, had all the girls, had all the teachers that were, you know, I mean, it was terrible, but, you know. You know,
the teachers
how,
too. You had teachers coming on to you.
Yeah. You
wow.
know, I was. You know, God forgive me, but I was a bad boy. But that's in that days, in those days. You know, I mean, you know, that's how it was.
It must
you know?
Have been like really hard. I think you know when you're so young and to be given all of this attention, like you just eat it up. I can't even imagine what that would be like for a boy, you know, because you basically became a man in that
age.
Field, exactly. And so you're getting all this attention and all this adoration, and you have your hormones are kicking in, and the girls are looking at you, and you got older women looking at you. So, you know, I think any guy, really, unless they're a monk, and then they wouldn't
right.
be a fighter. because right. they're a monk, you know, they would probably go like, wow, this is really great. And, you know, life
this
is good.
This is life is incredible. But then you have to understand that boxing is something else. This is where you really realize that that's, you have to find out at some point in your life that you've probably heard the term that women weaken legs, or you've heard that before, or see, you see, when I won a championship before, or where they kind of speak bad about it, where one of the managers speak bad about it, they said that I once had a battle with Cupid. One of the announcers was speaking bad about it because he was kissing my manager's butt. Just say he was an announcer and stuff like that, which really, really made it look bad on TV. But I won the championship, you know. No matter what he would say, I still destroyed the guy. But he was making the girl look bad and trying to make it look bad on TV, what he was commentating. But I still destroyed the guy. Doesn't matter. I could send you that on tape.
Okay.
I could send you that on tape, and you can hear the background. You know, the background on what this guy is saying. And
so was he commenting about you falling in love with someone? What?
Oh yeah. Oh, there goes where he needs to keep this girl away and whatever, you know. And you know, she needs to stay home and what? Oh, he's just on YouTube. It's disgusting what he says about the girl. She was a beautiful girl. She was a beautiful girl. Yeah, I mean she was, and so that's she was the problem. You know, she was the problem supposedly, but believe me, she wasn't the problem. You know, I took care of business no matter what. But it was a tough fight. You got to be prepared for these fights.
So they thought that maybe you weren't paying attention as much to your career if you had a love interest.
Well, they figured that I wasn't taking care of certain things. But I was in tip-top shape. That was the only fight. You see, you know, like I said, you know, oh boy, but you know, women do. It was a problem. That was my problem in boxing. See, I regret things that I did wrong, and God forgive me. I sit back here and I, think back of my career today. Mm-hmm. Okay, I think back of my career, and I reflect a lot. Sometimes and
going down memory lane.
Yeah, and I think about it a lot. I could have did a lot of things. I could have, you know, been. I fought for the world title in Argentina. I've done a lot of things. I've knocked out a lot of world champions. I've been in there with the best Marvin Hagler, and he had trouble with me. I've done everything. I've boxed the best fighters in the world. They've all had trouble with me and stuff like that, and I've known what I've done and how difficult it's been for me, you know, for them to get, you know, when I really am in tip-top, because when you're in tip-top, nobody can get to you. And when you're in shape and when you're right, nobody can do anything. It's, you know.
What does it take to get an athlete like you in tip-top? Top shape, because it isn't just a physical thing, it's also a mental thing.
Tell me a little bit about that. First of all, you know, the physical thing is easy.
Wow.
The physical thing,
it's, you tell me it's easy. That's awesome, because that, you know, there's so many people struggling with weight in America, so many people struggling with getting up and going and doing, you know, exercises. They say it's no fun. So tell me, how is that easy? Because I want to learn.
Well, the physical thing is easy. If you like to exercise, okay, if you like to exercise, if you like to exercise, and if you're born to exercise, and if you're born to do the right thing, you know, and if you're born, if your body is made to get yourself prepared, you know, if you already, you know, like I say, you know, made your mind up that you have to get yourself prepared for training and, you know, and just prepare your body to battle and go out there and do the right thing, you're prepared, okay? There's not a problem. There's
okay, so for me, exercise would be different than for a fighter, because when you guys are out there training to fight, you're training to kick somebody's butt and kick them down.
Yeah.
So how many hours a day do you have to train? And I mean, do you train until like you're can't, you know? Because I have exercised before, and I sometimes I've done it until I'm like I'm so sore I can't move. Do you? I mean, what do you guys do? How do you do it? Do you do it that way, or do you?
Well, this is what we do. We have to get up every day in the morning, early in the morning. You have to run. You have to run, whether it's for an hour. I would always. It's like I say, my body today. I feel the pain today. My body. I feel pain a little today. I run. I used to run like for an hour and a half in the morning, and I run far. I just love to run. I love to run because I never had a weight problem. If you run every day, you never have to worry. From Monday through Saturday, I would run, okay? And I would run for a good hour and a half, okay?
So do you have to wear, like, special shoes to run, like special tennis shoes?
Well, yeah, you have to have those good running shoes, of course.
Okay.
Good running shoes that are going to take you far. And that can take you, the good running shoes, not those cheap ones.
Okay, get a good pair of good running shoes,
always, right? And you run as far as you can run, but you got to start off slow, whatever you want.
Okay.
For anybody, and I mean this for anybody that likes to run. If you like to jog, if you want to lose a little bit of weight, if you want to do whatever, it's so good. Exercise is good for you, know what, no matter what, anyway.
Right.
But this is me as I'm saying as a boxer.
Right. And so, do you stretch too? Do you stretch and you run?
No, before I do all that, I do that. Before I run, that's what I'm doing. First of all,
okay.
I'm stretching. Yeah. Before I do that, that's what I'm doing. Before I run is my stretching.
So you run, you stretch, you run for an hour and a half, and then what?
And then I come back, and after I run, I stretch again, and then after that, I come home, and I'm still, you know, I'm all wet, I'm sweaty, and I sweat, but I don't know about you, but I sweat. I don't sweat. I'm like a monster. I sweat like crazy. and it just feels so good because you know you put in a great day. Run and
so when you're pumped up after running an hour and a half, you come home and you take a shower and you cool down and you go back again, or do you continue
hours?
No.
You come back and then let's say you see now they have different type of techniques. Now you got guys that have like strengthening trainers. I never needed that. I was a natural puncher. See, some guys are born with it. You're either a puncher or you're not, okay? Okay? Okay, this is the difference in boxing. You are born with a punch or you're not, okay? You have guys like, I'll give you an example, okay? Who can I give you as an example? You have good boxers. And then you got a puncher, okay?
Uh-huh.
You've seen them, okay? All right? They're great boxers. Muhammad Ali was a great boxer. Muhammad Ali could punch too. But he was more of a good boxer, okay? Hector Macho Camacho, great boxer. Not a big banger, but he was a good boxer. You know, Ray Leonard sometimes, he's a good boxer. Not a great one puncher, not a big one puncher. Now, he can't knock you out with one punch. Tommy Hearns can knock you out with one punch. Not a great boxer. Okay? You got
so
guys.
Back then they didn't have the strengthening, and you didn't need it because you were a natural, so you didn't need all that.
So you come back
and you're all sweaty, and what do?
So you come back and sometimes you need like stuff like you do stuff like this stuff like what you know the universal stuff. That you do like universal machines, weight training, universal machines, what do you call that? That strengthening, you know, the...
Yeah, like lifting weights.
I don't lift weights. Weight lifting is not good for boxers.
Oh.
It makes you stiff, okay?
I never knew that.
Yeah, boxers don't lift weights. Boxers don't lift weights. You look at me, if you were to see me, you'd probably think that I lift weights. Or I lift weights.
Right. I did. When I looked at those muscles, I'm like, wow, man, he must be doing some weightlifting.
I never lift weights in my life. Never.
Neither do I.
You know, I never lift weights in my life, and, you know, that's cool. Thank God I never had to do that.
I'm going to stop you here, Alex. We have a caller for you, and let's see what this person wants to say. Good evening. You're on the air with Guanarama, Alex, and Alex Ramos.
Hello. How you doing?
Good, good. How are you?
Alex said he needed some he needs some good shoes. Is that what he said? Well, that's because he was running from me all the time.
Running from you?
Yeah, you remember? It's Vidal,
oh,
how you doing?
What's up, Gumacinto? Oh, man.
Alex, how you doing?
I'm running from Gumacinto, then I'm doing good. This guy right here is one of our representatives. This is one of our representatives in Philadelphia. This is Gumacinto Vidat, and this guy right here does incredible work for us in Philadelphia. And he's been with us for several years. And Cubanarama, this guy is unbelievable, unbelievable.
How you doing, Cubanarama?
Really, really good, Gumacinto. I was reading.
I had no idea. I had no idea the show was on. I just happened to be on a radio show just now and saw the advertisement. I saw Alex, and I clicked on it. The show said it was on air now.
I know how you feel.
Alex is one of the best human beings you can meet in your life. One of the kindest. One of the kindest, strongest men you can ever meet. He's the hardest worker in boxing today. I love this man, and he's loved by so many people in this world. What he gives to the Retired Boxer Foundation, to the boxers, the ex-pro fighters, no one can match. I mean, this guy breaks nights. He worries about everybody. He cares. His love is real. I love you, Alex.
I love you too, man. It's so man. When I heard the voice, I said,
thought it was somebody you beat up one time. Well, actually, he did one time. I had to visit the Apollo Boxing Club one time, and I used to do a little amateur fighting, and I used to go from gym to gym, mostly PALs. And one time I went to his club, and his trainer was Camacho. And I thought I was big and I was bad, and I said, you know what, I want to go in the ring with this guy. Camacho said, are you sure with this guy? This guy's golden glove. I said, oh, man, I think I can handle it. Mm. I lasted, 30 seconds? I don't know what it was. He gave me a left hook, knocked my ass down. That right now, listen, if you mention the name Alex Ramos, my left eye begins to twitch. You know what I mean? I'm telling you. But yes, he has a punch. He is a puncher and a boxer, and that's what you don't find in a lot of fighters. A lot of fighters can move around the ring and they can hit you 12 times, blah blah blah, but they can't knock you out. Alex Ramos could knock you out with any hand, left or right.
Cool.
And he was a boxer at the same time.
Well, doing the research for this show, I was just thinking, because I really like to put myself, submerge myself in the feeling of who it is that I'm bringing on and what they do for a living. And I tell you, I closed my eyes and I could, picture myself being a boxer. And I thought, one punch on the head would not feel good. In the eye, in the ear, I think I would just, one punch, that's all it would take. And I would be like, okay, I'm done. I don't want to play anymore. Come on. I would, thank God for, please get me out of here. How is it that you guys do it? Because, Gumercindo, I see that you too, were a fighter at one time. I don't know if you're still a fighter, but you fought only bigger kids.
Yeah, I had mostly strip fights and anything else. I gained a big reputation. So I just followed it up and went to gyms just to stay in shape, to beat up people who used to bully. I used to hate bullies, and I used to beat them up.
Yeah.
And I was the protector of my block and my family. So I've always picked the bigger kid, because when you knock down a big kid, you look good. And if you lose, you don't look bad. And if you fight a little guy and you lose, you look like a fool. So I always fought the big guys, So I bring them on, and I knew to do that, I had to stay in shape and I had to stay trained. And that's when I went to clubs to clubs, and that's when I met my friend Alex Ramos, and we haven't seen each other for many, many years.
Yeah.
Then I was trying to get this business. I have a business in Philadelphia. I have a retail shop. We retail to police, security, and I also have a spy shop. And I started looking up Ramos and kept looking up Alex, and sure enough, there was the Retired Boxers Foundation. And I said, wow, he looks just the same, except he's a little white on the top. And I remember seeing him at a celebrity match on TV with, what was that? Was that the guy from Welcome Back Carter, right?
For Ron Palillo.
Horshack?
Ron Palillo, Horshack.
Koshak, right. So I said, wow, that is Alex Ramos. But look at that white hair. Damn. Se puso más viejo que yo. And I said,
he got older than me quick.
Yeah. So I looked him up, and I contacted one of the Retired Boxers Foundation's representatives, the doctor, retired.
Uh-huh.
And I sent her an email, and I said, listen, I want to reach Alex. And once we talked, I said, Alex, I'm going to go see you out there. So I flew out of California, and we spent a day together out there. It was great. It was great.
That is awesome. And you are a former contract lieutenant for the GSA in Philadelphia, which is the Gang Special Unit, right?
Yeah.
Well, that was the federal government.
Okay.
We did the buildings. I've also was a contract investigator for the police department, school police officer, armored car driver. I'm now personally a private detective. I'm also an instructor, self-defense instructor on the use of baton, mace, and things like that. So, I've been around.
That is awesome, and especially because...
I'm also an author. I wrote the book, You Only Live Twice.
Yeah, that's right.
You can find that on Amazon.com.
You only live twice?
You only live twice. You didn't know
I
that?
I have to read that book. I have to read it because I always thought you only lived once. And everybody keeps telling me you only lived once.
If you only lived once, I would have been dead already. You lived twice. So, Alex lived twice. I lived twice.
Yeah.
You're right. Alex, we have to talk a little bit about that.
But I'm
so glad that you have called Gumercindo. I think I have to, between you and Ruthie and everybody else, I have a lot of people that I can interview for future shows. I would love to have 2 hours with you as well, because I think you have an amazing story. Just because I was reading about you today, and I was like, wow, this guy sounds like he's, some people have a life, and it's not like they're not interesting, but they just, they just do one thing all of their lives. But you have been, all over. You've done so many different things, But
that's why I had to write a book.
That you only live twice. I have to get that book. Where is that book available, by the way?
Well, it's available. It's been available since February. You can get it at Amazon. Just type in my name, Gumasundu Vidal, get it at Amazon. You can also get it at Yolt, Y-O-L-T, books.com. But I didn't come here to talk about me. I came here to talk about Alex. And
yes.
Hear Alex out, so I don't want to. But maybe next time you know how to reach me.
But
you know what?
You're my representative. He's my representative. You know, it's like I say, I have wonderful representatives like my captain that lives out there in New Jersey. You mentioned New Jersey earlier. We have
got some in the UK. You got some everywhere.
You know, I have them all over. I have them in the UK. If you like, I like to mention a few of them. So that you
absolutely.
Can know,
you have a lot of people that work with you from. I was looking at the on your website from Ohio, Chicago, Arizona, Philadelphia, Louisiana, and Canada.
All over. I even have James Carville, the guy that helped President Clinton become president, on our board.
Right.
And it's just God is working, and it's hard sometimes. It's like I say, it's hard, like, for us at times. It's very hard.
Yeah, that's one thing I like to express. The Tyler Boxer's Foundation gives so much.
It's hard.
No other foundation, I'm telling you right now, mark my words, has ever given so much without getting something in return. You have some other foundations that try to form, and some of them have their family and their mother and friends on payrolls. The Retired Boxers Foundation, no one gets a penny. Sometimes we go into our pocket, and
we reach into our own pocket to
help these fighters. Mm-hmm. So donations are very, very important. So please go to the Retired Boxers Foundation website, go to the PayPal, and give what you can. Matter of fact, the Retired Boxers Foundation was one of the ones who was responsible for saving the life of Rocky Lockridge, who was strung out on crack for cannabis for 12 years.
Which was on A&E intervention. They just did a big show. I don't know if you got to see that.
And I went out there. I met with Rocky, and I gave the information to Alex, and they took it from there, and they made sure that this guy got the best treatment. Until today, that man is clean and reunited with his family. Thanks to who? Alex Ramos and the Retired Boxers Foundation.
Yeah.
But you don't hear this big news, you know, unless you have money and you give it to the American Cancer Society like these celebrities do, and then they all become world famous. Oh, yeah. But see, Retired Boxers Foundation doesn't have that kind of money to be donated to the American Cancer Society so people can know who they are. They do it from love, okay? All from love.
I'm going to do it till I die.
The Spirit of God. Yep.
Absolutely. And, you know, when I was looking at what you guys have done, it's really amazing because, Alex, you started out by working with Sharon Stone and working on a project that she was doing that you came up with this idea. But it's a wonderful thing that here you are working with Sharon Stone and then you realize, wait a second, this is a career, this is something that I've done all my life, and there is nothing in place to help the boxers. And the reason why we need such a foundation is because there is no program. I mean, when you guys get paid for a fight, you guys don't have a 401. There is nothing in place. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, first of all, when fighters, when their careers are over, and I can say this, I've been saying this for years, there's no pension plan. There's no medical benefits. There is nothing. Of course, there's... Everybody thinks that fighters make millions of dollars, okay? Mm-hmm. There's fighters that make millions, okay? If you could name 10, I'd like to know who they are, okay? All right? There's some that make money. You hear about fighters having problems with back taxes, okay? That's number one, okay? A lot of fighters, they come back for a reason, because they have problems with back taxes. That's a huge problem. That's mm-hmm. when they fight past their age. They fight past their age, they get hurt. They shouldn't be fighting at a certain age. Okay, that's another problem. All right? A lot of these guys, you don't even hear from them that shouldn't be fighting, number one, which is a sad thing. It's so, so sad. Some of these guys I have to pick up from the street sometimes. Some of them are at places where you don't even want to hear. I've picked them up homeless at shelters, at just places that are sad. It's crucial sometimes. We help them with whatever way we can. And that's how it is, and it's been like that for years. And I say, well, I put together a medical advisory board to help them to get the help that they need. I mean, I did this all myself with my executive director. I got myself an international medical advisory board to get some of these guys the help that with the help that they need, whether it's with neurological, because some of these guys get a lot of neurological problems. Some
right.
of them, you know, that's what happens. A lot of these fighters have neurological problems, whatever it is. And so some of these doctors help. I thank God for these doctors that help us. I got Dr. Raymond Sell, Dr. John Stiller, Barry Druxman. I could just thank them all. I got Colonel Bob Sheridan who helps us. I got such great people behind us that try to do the best they can. They send us the little checks that they can to help us every now and then so that we can continue, so that we could stay alive.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and you would think with all the money that's generated in the sport of boxing that, you know, more would come, of course, but no, it's not like that. It's not like that. That's the sad part of it. That's what I always say. But
and the fact that boxing is so, so corrupt, it's
yeah, well,
it
that's
uglier.
The thing.
You know, the Retired Boxers Foundation has fought many years to try to at least get some kind of pension plan for the fighters.
Yeah,
I mean, if they take $1 from each ticket sale, 25 cents from each soda drink that's sold at these boxing events,
mm-hmm.
you will have enough money to at least have some medical coverage for these fighters. But these guys won't even give a quarter, not even a quarter. So the Don King, matter of fact, Don King last year, he gave millions of dollars to the American Cancer Society. He made
up,
billion.
You
this guy made a billion from. Yeah, he made a billion from boxing, but yet he gives money to the American Cancer Society, which is a great organization.
I look up at all their 1040s, all their 1040s. Okay, because you could do that on the internet,
mm-hmm.
and you could see who they give their money to, all of them.
Why do you think that is? Why do you think they don't take care of their own? Because it would be to their benefit, I would think, to make it so that when boxers retire, they don't end up in the street, they don't end up hung
know.
Out on drugs.
That's a sad thing. That's a sad story. I don't know why.
I think if they just simply don't care, and they're not going to get no advertisement if they go up on ESPN and say, oh, I just gave money back to boxing. You know?
But
if they give to the American Cancer Society, this is big news to everybody. This goes worldwide.
But
so it's mostly
But real quick, you just mentioned something, which
mm-hmm.
you, Vidot, I also think about. I'm very good friends with all the networks, okay? You mentioned ESPN. I'm not too crazy about them, but because they also I'm not too crazy about ESPN, but you got, you know, the other networks and stuff like that, which can help too, you know. It's a big thing. Television or just that's where everything goes. That's where money is generated too.
Promoters. Do you think that if the boxers demanded something like that, it would be something that is in place? Because you mentioned that a lot of these people, when they first start boxing, they're so young. You know, like yourself, when you're 11 years old, or even if they're teenagers, nowadays they know a little bit more about finances because they study a lot more in school. But still, I mean, they're thinking, I'm going to be making this kind of money for some time. Nobody ever sees, you know, their career ending sooner. And maybe, you know, they have to end it because of injuries. And they don't realize that they haven't really saved, and possibly there's not a whole lot of other things that they really want to do with life, you know, in their life. Because I can't imagine when you're in the ring and you really you're involved in a sport like boxing, that there's anything else out there that is as, you know, exciting. Do you know what I mean? Because it's got to be any kind of sport. I mean, if you're playing any kind of sport. There's nothing else. You wouldn't want to be sitting in an office after.
Well, you know what?
You know?
That's what the problem is. When you're that young, you're not thinking about the future. See, when I was young, okay, I wasn't thinking about my future. You're living in the moment.
Right.
And that's what a lot of these guys are doing. They're not thinking about planning for retirement. They're living in the moment. They're not thinking about saving, about the 401ks. They're not thinking about what they need to save or what. But deep down inside, that's what they should be doing because it's very important. And a lot of these guys blow their money on buying cars and buying this and spending this and buying houses and this
traveling
house.
And girls. Are there retired women fighters, boxers?
Yeah, listen, I'm working with that. In fact, they made me, I want you to know, I'm a supervisor for, it's called the Global Boxing Union. They also have men, but in fact, I'm a supervisor now for a women's organization, but also men. It's called the Global Boxing Union. In fact, I've been traveling now. I travel now all over the world. My next championship fight is coming up here in August. Then I got two in August, and then I got my major one in Korea. I just did the last one in Guyana, a heavyweight championship, which was the Port of Brazil. I go as a supervisor. What I do is take the championship belts and give the championship belts to the. I gave a championship belt to this woman, heavyweight championship. Yes, there is women. Okay, they do have them, and that's the Global Boxing Union. Okay,
I'm going to look it up. Alex, do you think that if more women got involved in something like what you're doing and supporting you, that maybe things might change? Because women tend to be nurturers.
We have
our boys, we have our babies, and then, you know, our sons and our husbands are out there, our boyfriends. And do you think that if women got involved in this, it might make a difference?
Well, listen, that's what I'm doing. You're talking to the thinking men's middleweight. You know, this is what I'm doing. I've been talking to one of our representatives from the Global Boxing Union, Marcel, okay, who's been with the Global Boxing Union for quite some time. And he knows how I am, and he knows how good of a person I am. And so what he's done, he has made me a supervisor for North America. So I cover the entire North America, plus, like I say, I cover everything. With North America is pretty big. And so I cover all these countries, plus I think it's, I forget what else. I can't remember all the countries I cover. Canada is one of the countries. And I can't remember which other one. So now I go to these places, and me as a supervisor, first of all, I'm there also scoring the cards, scoring the fights, giving the championship belts, and also as a supervisor, I have to speak because I'm a supervisor besides giving the championship belt, okay, to the winner of the fights. And I'm meeting more people, so, and there's women fighters, okay? Because Europe has a lot of women fighters, okay? So
wow.
Now, okay, Europe has a lot of women fighters. Europe likes to have a lot of women fighters.
We don't hear about that too much here in America, do we?
That's the thing, okay? But, okay, look, my next fight is in Denver. And my other fight is in New Mexico, and they're both women, okay? So look at that. That's in the United States, okay? Albuquerque, New Mexico, and in Colorado. Two women fighters, two championship.
Keep me posted. Keep me posted on all of those, and I will post everything that's, you know, that's going on my webpage, cubanarama.com, and on Facebook, since, you know, we have a lot of friends all over the United States, and people are listening, you know.
Yeah, I'll send it to you so that you could know, listen. And then I got, in September, I got to fight another women fighter in Korea. So I get to travel to Korea for another championship fight. I'll send you all that information in a few minutes.
Alex, are you involved in the training as well?
What was that?
Are you involved in the training as well?
No, no, no. All I got to do is just go give them their championship belts, man. That's
okay.
All to it.
Cool.
So, you know, I mean, and go give them their championship belts and say hello and score. All I got to do is be like a judge, score the scorecard of their fight. That's it. Score it each round, see how they do, see who wins the fight. You know, like, I'm like a judge. I'm like a judge. It's great. You kidding me? I've been judging fights all my life, okay? I know
this
who wins. It's
such
good.
A wonderful foundation, the Retired Boxers Foundation. When you first started the foundation, Alex, you had a very influential person that helped you a lot, Ron Shelton and his wife. Tell me a little bit about what he did for you and the foundation.
Ron Shelton, I want to tell you something about him. This is the man, he's married to Lolita Davidovich, the actress.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Ron Shelton, he was the guy that really, really got us started where we're at, put us where we're at, and until the day that I die, I love this man because he did put us in where we're at. I went to a grand opening to one of his screenings in Hollywood where he had Kevin Costner, every Hollywood, James Woods, every Hollywood actor you could think of. Okay? I was a little embarrassed. You know, he had me stand up. He had Sugar Ray Leonard and all these guys, and, you know, you would think, you know, these guys, you know, they didn't even, no big deal. I get a little, you know, upset sometimes about all these guys. But anyway, he had all these actors, and he was having a movie. I can't remember the name of it right now because I got a little brain freeze. But
is it Tin Cup or no?
Well, no, not Tin Cup. It was another one, a boxing movie with Antonio
Banderas. Play It to the Bone?
Play It to the Bone. There you go, honey. You got it. You got it. Play it to the bone. Play It to the bone. Okay, anyway, on the first opening night of Play It to the Bone, okay, right? He was, he made me stand up. Antonio Banderas was there with Melanie Griffith. Everybody was there. It was so nice. And he already had spoke to Jackie, my executive director. She's a wonderful lady, Jackie. You'll meet her one day, she's just a great lady. And he talked to Jackie first and told Jackie that he was going to give the Retired Boxers Foundation $50,000 to start out the foundation so that we can start on operating expenses, okay? Mm-hmm. You know what? Not the sport of boxing, not nobody in the world gave us a dollar, okay?
Has ever matched what he has done.
Not nobody. Nobody. You know, $50,000. Who's going to give us $50,000?
Wow.
But it was like this. It was $10,000 for 5 years, okay?
Right.
Listen, $10,000 for 5 years is unbelievable. Okay, to help out fighters, it's unbelievable. When he called my name in this premiere to stand up, I don't know why he called it, but when he told me what he was doing, I nearly could have peed in my pants or did anything else on my pants. You know? Because,
well,
you know,
what a,
you know,
I mean, his generosity, you know, I think I would have peed my pants too.
you know why? Because this is a man that loves boxing, who followed my career.
Yes.
And he said, you know what? What you're doing for the sport of boxing is outrageous and it's wonderful. And I've never in my life, and he's still, listen, when we have ran out of money, he sent us $500. Even
That's
after
amazing.
That, even after that, you know, we ran out of money. He sent us, you know, I mean, I don't want to bother nobody. We run out of money, you know,
Because the need is so great, the things that you are doing and the people that you're helping not only with the retired boxers, but there's a lot that you do even, you know, from the beginning of a child's life. I was looking at the list of things that you do with the retired boxing. With the PAL, tell me a little bit about the PAL program that because you work with them. That's the police?
Yeah, the police athletic league.
Where you help the children, the inner city children as well?
That also, that's a big thing. Listen, that was a big program for me, probably for Gumasindo too. And
for, sure was.
Right.
And for a lot of kids, that was a big thing for me. Listen, first of all, I want to tell you, I was a gold medalist for the PAL, okay? I never was a representative for the PAL, but there was a guy by the name of Dick McGuire, I never forget his name, that used to come to my gym in the South Bronx to come pick me out to come represent the PAL Nationals. Okay, the PAL Nationals was probably one of the biggest amateur tournaments in the Bronx. And that, you know, you have to win in the South Bronx first, and then you go out to the Nationals. Okay,
okay.
Which meant you left the state. Anytime you get to travel, see, that's how I got to travel a lot as a young kid, as a teenager. So that's what I did. I would travel. I get to travel to all these different states, and I used to love to travel, of course. And Dick McGuire would come and pick me because I was the only one that was winning. So I would represent that division which was 147 or whatever weight class it was. And so I would always come back with the gold medal for that division.
Wow.
So I would win a gold medal no matter what. They always knew that at the division that I represented, it was a gold medal. So they come pick me. So not a problem. So the PAL, and so I keep working with those kids. I keep helping those kids. I was working with a bunch of them. I still represent them because those kids are important. I was working with a couple of them not too long ago. They were selling Kool-Aid. They were, in fact, I was with them about 2 weeks ago because they were having a yard sale because they want to open up another gym. And they're selling Kool-Aid, so I go help them. They're selling Kool-Aid at a yard sale, so I got to help them and stuff like that. I take them over to Freddie Roach's gym, so they got a little young kid that wants to learn how to box and stuff like that, so Freddie Roach watches him and stuff like that. He's a young kid, but he's still too young.
I can imagine when you look at these kids, you almost like you see yourself, and this is exactly where you started out. And your organization helped with financial services for the retired boxers,
fighters.
You help with rehabilitation services, with housing services, and the senior citizen services. I was also reading, I can't believe we have 36 minutes, like about 35 minutes left of the show. So I'm not rushing, but I just kind of want to make sure that I get this in so that we don't forget. Because I was reading, you have a lady that is part of the board that, is it Jackie? One of the gals, I'm looking for it now, who, she is it Jackie Richardson that... She or no, Beth Adams is the one that I'm thinking about.
Beth Adams.
She is involved in trying to figure out if there is anyone who is a retired boxer who is in a nursing home, a person that has been forgotten. Because to me that it was so important when I read that, I was like, wow, you guys really take care of your own. Because I would hate to be a retired boxer laying in a nursing home and never getting a letter, never getting a card, maybe you are someone who works in a nursing home and you know the person is a retired boxer and they have no family.
And they've had it happen.
Yeah, I can imagine. I can imagine that. And so please, we ask that you get a hold of the Retired Boxers Foundation and give them the information, because we want to put these people in touch with these guys that are there to help them and support them and, to talk about the old days and see what it is that they need. If there's any need that they have, the Retired Boxers Foundation is the place to go. And Beth Adams is the gal who is, it says here that she's a nationally recognized neurotrauma rehabilitation specialist in the Boston area who provides specialized and individualized rehabilitation services to those who have sustained a concussion or traumatic brain injury. She's a wonderful ally for your organization. And like her, every single human being that is in your foundation is amazing. I would love to know each one of them individually. Someone wrote in the in the chat room about your foundation and about the boxing. Let me see if I can find it here. Normally it's going up so fast. They said, where is it? Okay, fundraising is usually organized by insensitive and ego in people who are full of egos. But your organization, that's the one thing that I found that while reading about the organization and the people that are involved in the organization, everybody gives it 150%. I mean, you guys are something else. You really are.
Because it's real. because it's real, yeah. Martha. You know, I've been invited to many types of, you know, in my line of work, invited to many different types of organizations and all kinds of stuff. And I'm a member of a lot of children and police organizations here in Philadelphia. But when I was asked by Alex Ramos, well, actually, he didn't ask me. He demanded that I become a volunteer member. And I was in his house, so I couldn't say no because he would have knocked me out again. So I said, yeah, okay, you know, under threat, I said yes, because I really believed in it. I read on it and everything, and I saw that this was being run like a family. It was not being run by some big corporate or anything like that. This is a man who really cares about boxing and people, sitting in front of his computer, making contacts, making telephone calls all over the world to try to get a few dollars to help another fighter pay his rent. And when I started seeing things like this, and I say, well, I don't believe this guy. He definitely needs my help. You know, and then the shame of it is that there are so many people out there that can give, and they don't.
It's
they do not. And that's what gets me so angry. See, Alex always tells me, no, you know, we can't go out there and can attack them. But I attacked them. I attacked the Don Kings, the Oscar De La Hoyas, and all these people like that who made millions and millions of money of this boxing and do not give nothing back only because they're not going to be recognized. You know, they're not going to be recognized.
That is
you know,
so
come on,
because,
man. You know, have a heart.
Who cares about recognition? Because when you give, you know, I am not a Jesus freak, but I, you know, I grew up reading the Bible, and the Bible talks about when you give because you want to help, not to, and don't scream it out in the public arena. Go and give the person, you know, whoever needs your help, and who cares if. You know, you don't need everybody giving you a standing ovation because you've done something good.
Amen.
You do something good because it makes you feel good. Because when I do something wonderful for another human being, it just makes me feel like I'm on top of the world if you give somebody some joy.
And you can feel the blessings come back to you.
Absolutely.
You'll get the blessings back, you know. So
that's
how it works. But unfortunately, these guys do not see it that way because it's right now what's happening in boxing, the way I see it right now, is that they're draining boxing out as much as it can. Like you're seeing the same fighters over and over and over again. PALs are being closed down. PALs who save
There's
so many lives.
Keep
in mind that a lot of people, a lot of these kids who went through the PAL was because they wanted to escape the streets. That's the reason why I did it. So when you go through the PAL and you get into boxing, because you actually literally fighting your way out of the ghetto. Now they're closing these things now. Okay?
So
and then you got the
PAL, so that people you know, who have just tuning in, it's the Police
Athletic
League. And how is it that they function? Where do they get their money?
Well, they get it. That's government money because I don't know exactly, but that's like a government program. So they get their money. Mm-hmm.
It was formed by
exactly
police officers, actually.
They were funded by the police officers. I don't know exactly.
Actually, the police officers started it, and they wanted to reach out to the kids. And then they made it a sort of a clubhouse type thing.
Yeah.
Where boxing was the last sport to actually get on. I mean, they used to have pool tables, ping pong, stuff like that to get the kids out of the neighborhood. And then eventually they put boxing in there. You had some former fighters who were police officers.
Yeah,
and then they started training kids in the street. Next thing you know, there's a lot of well-known fighters who went through PAL.
Yeah,
PAL, like Alex Ramos himself.
You know, we have a listener right now that says, my father was once a local president of a PAL. Yeah, really. Thank you, Caroline, for sharing that. It's really something. The reason I was asking is because we really need to, you know, there's so many kids that end up in trouble because they grow up in, like you say, the bad neighborhood. Maybe the parents don't have a lot of money, and then there's drugs, and then there's gangs. And if you can get to them in the beginning with the PAL, I noticed that if you guys, anybody's interested in finding out where there's a a pal in your city, you can look up this website. It's www.nationalpal.org. www.nationalpal.org. And this is a wonderful, you know, organization that will help the kids in your city. Actually, I live in Minneapolis, and there's four in Minneapolis. There's one in Leech Lake, Minneapolis, Rochester, and St. Paul. But look them up in each city. And if you can do something to spread the word about the Retired Boxers Foundation, send the link to all of your friends. You know, so many times we're watching television and we're seeing starving children in other areas of the world, you know, earthquakes and, you know, you name it. There's a lot of people in need. Sometimes you go, you know, you get bombarded. My thing is this, I always say, I can't help other people unless I help my family, unless I help my country. You know, it's wonderful if you want to help somebody outside of, you know, the USA, but find something that really stirs you up in the United States with whatever it is. I like giving to companies and organizations that I know they're putting their money to good use. Because when I was in college, I did a lot of volunteer work, and I know there's a lot of organizations taking money, and they say they give, and the money doesn't go where it's supposed
to go.
Where
they say it goes.
Exactly. And they're telling me charity begins at home. Charity begins at home, people. Give to America. Help your friends in America. Help your brothers, your sisters, your community. If, you know, if we help anywhere in the world where there's a need, who is it that gives? I feel that Americans are the most giving people in the whole entire world. And if we don't have the money to give, if we're sending all the money out, then how are we, I don't know. I think that we need to support this country. We really do. We need to strengthen this country so that people who are making it, that we can go out and then reach out to the rest of the world. Because if you send it all out, then there's nothing in the pot. There's just nothing.
It's so true.
I don't understand it. I don't understand people who just don't look at what's going on in America today and realize that we have to help each other. We have to help your community. The retired, you guys are amazing that all of the money, I have never heard, and I've worked with a lot of different organizations and seen what, I've never heard of any other except for maybe USA.org or USA Cares, which is another organization that helps military servicemen and women doing the same thing that you guys do, but with the military. And but this is an amazing thing because, you know, when people are done with their career, whether it is a military or boxers, and they come home and they're either missing a limb or they're, you know, something isn't working because of the damage that you guys sustain. Tell me about what happens. What kinds of damage are these guys experiencing when their careers are over?
Oh, well, let me tell you. Well, there's something that's called, first of all, pugilistic dementia, okay? And I'll tell you what that means. It's something that it's known as punch drunk syndrome, okay?
Uh-huh.
And then there's 87% of the fighters when they leave the sport, 87% of them.
Uh-huh.
And it's studied. Okay, my executive director is a great researcher. She does all that stuff, Jackie Richardson, who I love dearly. She's incredible at what she does. She's done all the research for me. 87% of the fighters, when they leave the sport, they leave with a little bit of damage, okay? 87%. Now, that's pretty high.
That is high.
Okay, and, of course, I myself have a little bit of damage. Okay, I have frontal lobe damage and right temporal. Okay, but there's ways to take care of it. A lot of fighters don't take care of it because a lot of fighters don't know about it. A lot of fighters don't go get the examinations because they don't know about it. They don't know where to go, or they just self-medicate. They see there's things that they self-medicate. They go to the self. When you self-medicate, it brings it on worse. Okay, alcohol or drugs or anything else will make it even worse. Okay.
Right.
Okay, that makes it even worse. Okay, and I'm not gonna deny it. I was heading in that direction. And I thank God I didn't go in that direction. But you see, a lot of fighters do. And what do? You know, I mean, these guys know a lot of. I want to tell you something. Fighters don't come from Beverly Hills or your Ivy League, right? Or your Ivy League. They come from the ghettos, the barrio, and your third world countries. Okay.
Right.
So. That's what happens, okay? This is what happens to these guys.
And so to be diagnosed, they have to go to a doctor, and they have to be examined, and then the doctor will check out what your sensation, balance, reflexes, memory, all that sort of info. It's, then they have to take x-rays as well, I'm sure.
You know that a lot of the family members notice first before they do.
Wow.
The family members see the change in personality, the change in this, the things, and this. The fighter is probably in denial or just don't see it. And the family members are usually the ones that contact the Retired Boxers Foundation.
Yeah. There was one guy at first, the first guy that I had to, I could send you the link. You know, but if I still got it or if I could find it, there was one guy that was walking around with a map in his pocket to remember where he lived.
Oh.
It was
sad. And so is medication helpful when they have problems like this?
Well, I'm doing okay.
Well, Alex is still here.
I'm doing great, honey. I'm doing great. I'm speaking to you like I know what I'm doing.
And you can still kick
my
butt.
I don't know what you're doing. You do absolutely know what you're doing because, you know, to take on this feat, this is huge, Alex. This is really huge. To take on the entire, to embody all these people that are coming after you, who are boxers, and to say, hey, guys, listen, you know, for you to get the first person, Ron, to listen to you and his wife, to get them to give you $50,000 to get all of these people who have been, you know, instrumental in organizing and being a part of the organization and not taking a penny from it at all, but giving of their own, you're doing something right. You told me today that you are an amazing communicator, and you certainly are. You have to have had, you know, even though you had some damage, you knew exactly what you wanted to do with the organization. You knew exactly the issues and the problems, and you had this picture in your mind, and you said, you know, we have to do something about it.
We got to do something, and we got
absolutely.
To, and I thought about it, and I said it. You know, I it's a dream that I had, and, you know, that dream in my life, is I'm not going to stop it until I die. I'm not going to stop till I die. I have a bunch of Hollywood. When I started this, I say it from my heart. I started this with all this memorabilia. I got a bunch of Hollywood memorabilia back here in Jackie and Reggie's house.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? You wouldn't believe the stuff that I got from Hollywood. Bo Derek is a very good friend of mine. She's on my board, too, okay?
Right.
Her and her husband,
right.
Before her husband died, John Derek, okay? They gave me a lot of stuff. I got stuff from Harry Belafonte when I used to date his younger daughter, Gina. I got stuff from all Hollywood. Hollywood. You know, it was unbelievable. I was getting all these things sent to me from all these Hollywood actors and actresses. Shirley MacLaine was my biggest donator. Shirley MacLaine, are you here listening? And I'm saying, wow, Shirley MacLaine sent me this. I go to her house and she sent me all this stuff. She gave me a projector. She gave me stuff from China. She gave me, this is when I went to China, with letters of authenticity. I said, wow, this is like, you know, I'm like shocked. You know, I can't even think of all the people. Ed O'Neill from Married with Children. I said, I'm just blown away. I'm blown away. These people are sending me these things. That they're sending me these things.
Mm-hmm.
I said, wow, this is really happening. I got this Jackie's garage filled up with all these Hollywood things. But then when I figured, wait, what am I doing? I'm getting all this Hollywood stuff. I need to get stuff from boxing.
Right, right. And that there's the where it becomes difficult then. Because do you feel like when you're up in the pedestal and everything is going great and you're boxing and you're on top of the world, everybody wants to be your friend. But then you're done, your career is over, maybe you're not doing so hot anymore, maybe you got some damage, maybe you fall in bad times financially. Do you think people don't look at boxers the same way?
Well, you know what? No, I don't think of it like that. No, I didn't think of it like that because when, you know, when I did that event for Sharon Stone, she didn't look at me like that, and neither did her sister.
Good, good.
Okay? And see, Kelly is her name. Kelly, Sharon Stone's sister's name, Kelly.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Okay, mind you, you don't take a nonprofit organization from California into Las Vegas to raise money for. A lot of people don't normally do that because it's not going to really raise that much money in Vegas. Because a lot of people don't like to do that. This is a California organization.
Okay.
And
but you help boxers from all over. I mean, it doesn't matter where they live.
Right,
exactly. Okay.
Right. See, but this was right, exactly. Right, exactly. And can you believe that Sugar Ray Leonard was right around the corner, and Sugar Ray Leonard, I got Sugar Ray Leonard's, this is the sad thing. And I never forget this. Sugar Ray Leonard was right around the corner, and I used Sugar Ray Leonard's boxing class, boxing group, because it was. I had Sugar Ray Leonard's kids boxing that day, exhibition, you know, and it was, you know, come over and see the kids. At least come by and say hello. You're Sugar Ray Leonard, and he was next around the corner. Around the corner. Next door. And he didn't come by. And that was kind of, you know.
That's sad.
What was that?
I said that's sad.
That's
well,
sad.
There's a lot of them like that, Alex. We know that, you know. And,
but to me,
boxing,
it's a,
boxing makes a certain type of person.
But that's why I say, to me, but I'm kind of rough sometimes, and
yeah, I know.
You don't want to hear me sometimes.
Really?
I say things sometimes, and I.
Yeah, sometimes I have to hang up on Alex when he's talking.
Yeah,
I can imagine how, you know, there are times that your heart is just touched by the generosity of people, and then sometimes your heart is just like squeezed by the lack of compassion that you see. You know, somebody on the chat room here is saying that you sound like a very embracing man, and they're asking, is he married, is he a dad, or does he have a brother?
To who? If I'm married?
Yes, there are.
The only thing you heard,
all right?
Am I married?
Is he a father or does he have a brother?
I'm not married. Number one, never been married. I don't have any kids.
He's available.
I don't have any kids. Never been married in my life. And if God ever wants that to be, that'll happen. But I've never been married, no.
And do you have a
lucky
brother?
Woman.
What was that?
Do you have a brother?
No, I don't have a brother. I'm my own brother. I'm not married, I said.
So he doesn't have a brother. He is not married. He's not married without children.
And I never been married.
Has been married. They're saying you're a great person. They have been enjoying the show so much. You are an amazing human being, Alex Ramos, the Bronx Bomber. We have just a few minutes left of the show. Can you tell me, we have 9 minutes, can you tell me why did they call you the Bronx Bomber? Why the Bomber?
Bronx Bomber. Well, I'll tell you why. Because George Steinbrenner, who died not too long ago, the owner of the New York Yankees, presented me with the Yankee pinstripe boxing robe and the Yankee pinstripe boxing trunks. I am the only fighter in the world, the only fighter in the world to wear the Yankee pinstripe boxing trunks and the Yankee pinstripe boxing robe. And I can send you that on Facebook, buddy. And I got Rick Cerrone and Bucky Dent right next to me. He was the good-looking guy back in the 80s. Bucky Dent was the handsome guy, and Rick Cerrone was third baseman. Bad. He was bad. Rick Cerrone could play baseball.
Another reason why they call him the Bomber is because he's got a right hook that says
and
he's
I could
camera.
Bomb. But also, too, the Bronx Bomber was because Joe Louis was called the Brown Bomber, okay? And Joe Louis could knock you out with either hand, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And I was known as a miniature Joe Louis, and they called me the Brown Bomber. But the Bronx Bomber was cool because I come from the Bronx. That was so they came out with that one. That was cool. That was a good idea, though.
I think so. I love it. I can't believe you were in the Bronx, and I was in Union City, New Jersey, growing up, probably around the same time. And I never knew about you. And here, after all these years, I am in Minnesota. And if my father was alive, he died in Miami, he would be so honored to have listened to this show and to say, oh, my God, I can't believe my daughter is interviewing. No, you know, I was always told to be quiet as a kid because I talked all the time like you.
Oh, that ain't no problem. We talk good.
We talked. I talked. My teachers always sent me home with a note saying I talked too much. My report card always said, you know, Marta talks too much. She can't be quiet. You know, she doesn't pay attention. And, you know, here we are today. And I tell you, this is the best job in the world of meeting people, interviewing people, and finding out what's going on with the world. What makes, you know, this is what makes the world go round, finding out about the amazing organizations, amazing jobs that people have. This is a wonderful job that you have created for yourself to help humanity, to help your brothers, to help your sisters, because you're also going to be helping what these women are going to do when they're retired women and they're going to be needing the same kinds of assistance that the guys need, I assume.
Oh, yeah. They need it now. That's why I'm attacking. God has given me that, too. Look, well, God don't make no mistakes. I get this phone call one day, and they tell me, okay, you're supervisor now for the women's boxing, too. That was unbelievable when they told me.
And Alex never says no, so.
And then my first trip was to Guyana in the port of Brazil. I did my first heavyweight women's fight, but that was kind of rough. She was, let me tell you, let me just make something, say something. I did my first woman's heavyweight fight, and she was a heavyweight fighter, okay? She was sweating.
I'll have the honors.
She was sweating. Sweating. Okay, I'm dressed up to present her belt, and she decides to give me a kiss. Oh man.
And a hug.
A hug? Come on, you just finished boxing. You know, you don't want to, you know, I don't want, you know, after a fight, you don't want to sweat and kiss and, you know, I just want to give you your belt. You know what I mean?
What's up with sweaty kiss once in a while, Alex?
You know, oh, man, what is this girl thinking about?
But, you probably wish you would have had a hose.
You know what I mean? But that's what happens. But you know, I
hold her down and then give her a towel.
Yeah, please, God. But with respect, I did it. With respect, I gave her a championship belt, and I got kissed sweaty anyway. But it was like, oh my God.
He never says no.
What was I? But that's how God. I'm respectful enough that. You know, it was like, okay, no problem. But that's what happens.
You're such a wonderful guy. Oh, my goodness. We have had a wonderful time this evening. What do you guys think? You're welcome to come back on the show anytime. I know you're going to be in Denver and New Mexico. You know, are these, we have like, they're telling me 4 minutes, 4 minutes, 3 minutes left of the show. When you go to the women's fight, is
I'm
that going
you,
to be
listen, Cubana Rama, I'm sending you all the women's stuff right now. I'm sending you. I got to keep you up to date with all the women's stuff. Porque tú eres una mujer, mujer, pero Dios te bendiga. You know what I mean? So I got to send you all the women's stuff right now. Because I'm all excited now because... Now I can keep you up to date with all these women fights and let you know who wins, let you know when these fights are coming. And,
yes.
You know, and because they're going to be great. They're great fights.
Women's are they going to be televised, Alex?
Some of them will, some of them won't. But if not, I'll let you just know. And if not, I'll give you the information. I have a media director by the name of, look, Mike, I'm getting tongue-tied today. Raybar, R-A-I-B-A-R, Raybar Chenna. Okay, Raybar Chenna, my media director, he'll probably be shooting some of this stuff, so I'll find out.
Okay.
I don't know.
Well,
but, you know,
when you send me the info, I will make sure that that we put it on the website and that we spread it all over I have several accounts. People always say they need a GPS to find me on Facebook because I'm everywhere,
cool.
And I have. I have, and
GPS.
Funny because I have several accounts. They go Cubana Rama. They go, which one is she? And I'm all of them.
I
have Cubana Rama music, Cubana Rama radio, Cubana Rama world news and events, Cubana Rama poet society. And
that's good. They got to look for you. They tienen que encontrar. They got to find you. They got to find you. That's cool.
Yeah,
I like it.
They do. And I also have accounts. I go to on a daily basis, but I have other people working them. I just don't have enough time.
Yeah.
The one that I always do work, though, is Cubana Rama Public Persona and the Cubana Space Rama.
That's cool.
So
that's cool.
You guys can find me there. Send me the info, and I will post it. Make sure I have a Twitter account, so my Cubana Rama goes to my Twitter. And it's amazing what the power of the Internet, people.
And
spread the word.
It's unbelievable. I love it. I tell you what, that I do love the computer. I love it.
I don't want to thank you.
Computer.
You know, 90 seconds left. They're telling me in the ear, I love you, Alex Ramos, and Comerciendo.
Thank you. What's up, Alex, brother? I'll be talking to you soon. Love you, bro.
Love you too, man. I just love being on your show. I just love saying Cubana Rama. Cubana Rama, Cubana Rama.
You are welcome to come on the show anytime, Alex. You know my number. I have your personal number as well, so call me anytime, and You know, my doors are always open.
Okay,
when you come
God
to Minnesota, call me up. We'll have some coffee.
I'll be down there someday soon. God bless you.
You
I
too,
really
Gubercindo.
God bless everyone. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. I love you guys. Love you, everyone.
All right. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Alex. And please don't forget the Retired Boxers Foundation. Find them on Facebook and send them some money because it will help somebody out that is really, really in need. I love you guys. See you here next week.
God bless. Sunday. God bless.
Mwah! Un besote bien grande. Love you guys.
Right.
Listen
right.
to the tune. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
The most anticipated match. Are you ready? For the thousands in attendance.
Don't call
and
it
the millions
comeback.
Watching around
I've been
the world. Anticipated match.